Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we start today with, of all things, Andy Warhol. More specifically, a series of artworks that Warhol made based on a 1981 photograph of the musician Prince. Noted rock and roll photographer Lynn Goldsmith took that fateful photo, and she has been entangled in a lengthy legal fight with Warhol's estate over whether Warhol violated her copyright with creation and use of a set of silkscreen prints that he made. We looked at the case here on the show after the Supreme Court heard oral arguments. So now that court has ruled, and it could have real implications for artists, museums, including some here in Massachusetts. Joining us now to tell us more, Peter Carroll and Bhamathi Viswanathan, both are faculty at New England Law in Boston. Peter, welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me again.
And Bhamathi, welcome to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so Peter, let's go back. Remind, you're the one that we talked to before.
Yes.
Remind us of the stakes in this case.
So the stakes in this case were pretty high. It's not often that we get art before the Supreme Court. And we were really there to learn about how much a secondary artist could change the works of an earlier artist and be able to use those works as he or she creates new works going forward. And that's pretty important for all people who create artworks, important for people who create writing, songs, you name it, all creators, really.
So what's that question really was... was it enough of Warhol's own versus still Lynn Goldsmith's original piece of art to basically who owned it? Is that fair?
That's fair. That's what we thought the question was going to be. And the Supreme Court told us maybe that's not the question.
Which is where this gets, well, there's many things that get interesting. But Bhamathi, let's just go quickly with how the ruling came down.
Yeah, it was confusing to some of us. So we're all still mulling it in the legal world. But let's boil it down, right? This was, the court says, Warhol takes this work and this photograph, and he makes another work that's competing in the exact same space, right? A photo of a musician turned into a silkscreen of a musician that's commercially used. And the first time he did it, he used a license. So why not this time? Well, the Warhol Foundation says, look, he made another series of works. But there's no licensed use for that second series of works. And the court's really concerned that, you know, can follow-on artists, look, artists borrow from each other all the time and they copy from each other all the time. But can a follow-on artist just do that and then say, hey, I changed it and made a brand new work?
Okay, so let's pause there. Basically, after Goldsmith took the photo, Warhol did a silkscreen, licensed it, and put it, and that silkscreen was on the cover of an issue of Vanity Fair in the 1980s. But then there was a second silkscreen that appeared on an issue of Vanity Fair cover in 2016, and that one didn't pay anything to Goldsmith.
Right.
And that's what led to this case, right?
Right. He did a whole series, actually, on his own accord. No one really knows why. Sadly, Andy Warhol isn't here to ask.
Yeah.
But when the Warhol Foundation gave Vanity Fair the right to put that on the cover, it wasn't one of the licensed uses. And Goldsmith, who's, you know, an up-and-coming struggling photographer, says, hey, I didn't get credit for that. I didn't get paid for it. Why is that just coming up now? So she's concerned that this use of her work that she didn't sanction is now out there and huge.
Okay, and Peter, the court basically said she's right.
The court definitely said she's right. And it was one way to look at this is to say this is just sort of a victory for a certain type of creator, namely photographers, right? This is a great case for photographers, people who sort of create source works that are often used by other artists after that. And the court was quite sympathetic to sort of her, where she was in the kind of the art world. She's a commercial photographer, and the court starts its opinion by saying, there's not just one artist here, not just Andy Warhol, there's two artists. And we have to be very sensitive to that interaction of how they both work. And ultimately, she's prevailed, and now we're going to find out on the damages side what happens going forward.
Okay, so a couple of things that are intriguing here. First, the majority is written by Sonia Sotomayor. Is that right, Bhamathi?
Right.
Okay, and Sotomayor uses this phrase that came from the Court of Appeals' prior ruling that calls it, quote, celebrity plagiarist privilege, end quote. intriguing term. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I think Peter and I disagree on this. I do think that the court's concerned that a struggling photographer, which she was in 1981, she's a huge deal now, right? But, you know, can Andy Warhol just come along and say, hey, I'm Warhol. I do all these transformative things. I make paintings of soup cans, okay, but also of Liz and Marilyn and all these iconic figures. And I'm transforming Prince from this, you know, up-and-coming musician to this iconic figure. And there's all sorts of stuff like criticizing commercialism and criticizing rock star fame or talking about it in my painting. And I'm changing it. But that's you, Warhol. We all know that that's what your shtick is. Is that enough?
I would say yeah. And the reason is because Warhol's Warhol for a reason, right? It's not just that we're saying, oh, Warhol's this deity because I don't know where Warhol became who he was, right? He was, you know, phenomenally important for 20th century contemporary art. And he, all the shtick that he was using was actually truly transformative. And he kind of, it's not a celebrity artist privilege, but it's a privilege of saying, if you are have so impressed the art community with how many contributions that you're making, then maybe you are truly transforming those source works in a very clear way.
So we're having a conversation with two professors at New England Law Boston, Peter Carroll and Bhamathi Viswanathan, after the Supreme Court has ruled on this case about whether or not Andy Warhol basically took material from a photographer, Lynn Goldsmith. The court has found that he did. There's interesting reaction in the legal community. It matters here because we have museums with prints and because it has an impact on future artists' work. I want to do a touch more on the court and then I want to bring it home to us. One of the other things that I think our listeners will find intriguing, I know that we did, and Bhamathi, I'll come back to you here, it's not very often that you not only find Justices Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan on opposite sides of an issue, but vehemently on opposite sides of an issue. And Elena Kagan wrote a dissent that was quite vehement here. So talk about that a little bit. And of course, Elena Kagan used to be the dean of the Harvard Law School, used to live here in the area. Talk about that a little bit.
I think it's also that art makes us passionate, right? I mean, we feel strongly about works of art. And at the same time, it's so weird to me because the court backs away from some of the most artistic questions here. Peter and I were just talking about transformative. The court's like, no, we're not going to talk about transformative. We're going to talk about commercial use and commercial space. And you can see them saying in the majority opinion, Sotomayor is saying, we don't want to be judges of art. And Kagan's going, you got to be a judge of art. Now, here I really sort of, I stand with the dissent, right? Why are you backing off from this? We make decisions all the time about, I don't know, whether blood is patentable, right? Whether a string of DNA is patentable. We make decisions about intent.
So why not? Am I understanding you in saying that basically the court was like, listen, we don't know if we're not going to say whether Warhol transformed her art or not. We're just saying that in the commercial use, Warhol owed her something. Is that fair?
I think that's right. And I think that's because there were so many other reasons why, however transformative he was, wasn't going to be enough to overwhelm the fact that this should have been paid for, and he was able to pay for it, and he didn't, and he was competing in the same market as her.
Okay.
But I do want to get back to your point about the unusual exchange between the justices here, because this is pointed, right? We don't usually see this in an opinion where the dissent is really speaking directly to Justice Sotomayor in the majority. And as you can probably see, I would recommend if anybody wants to read an interesting Supreme Court opinion, I know most of your audience is probably not looking to do that, but it's like an art history lesson from Justice Kagan in the dissent. It is just going through the history of sort of appropriation art, and to see the Supreme Court sort of bring that in is really an amazing moment. And I think maybe the majority felt a little bit put off by that. And maybe there was a sense of, hey, you don't need to lecture us on the history of art. And I think that's a little bit of what's going on there.
Giant diss. It's just a giant diss.
So it really is. I mean, it reads like when you're saying, no, it is what it reads like it is.
Yeah.
And that's very interesting. Okay, so as I understand it, the reason that local artists, for example, would want to pay attention to this is because, as Kagan argued in the dissent, we have a long, rich history of people's art taking inspiration and building off of other people's art. And this is a threat to that long, rich history. The reason that museums, et cetera, might care is because a museum might arguably have commercial use of something that the court might now have found was derivative of someone else's work? Am I anywhere near it on either of those or both of those, Peter?
Well, I feel a little bit differently about the museum piece. I think museums really
Let's
do need
there.
To worry about this.
Why?
But not because of the commercial use. The commercial use is going to be more who owns the copyright, which is usually not the museum, actually. All those works in their collections, usually it's somebody else who owns the copyright. The reason why I think museums need to be concerned is because they're acquiring art all the time that now might have a problematic history, right? Museums generally were not in the business of saying, well, this Warhol, how did he create it? Let's go open up the history.
And we have museums here that have Warhols.
Absolutely. The ICA has some wonderful Warhols. And when we get the chance to acquire a Warhol, we say, great, let's put this in our collection. But there's actually a lot of ethical canons in museum collecting practices that say, you know what, you're not supposed to collect copyright infringing material. So now if we have to go to that extra layer and say, oh, geez, on our acquisition committee, as we decide whether to accept this amazing work of late 20th century appropriation art, did they have permission? Should they have had permission? Do we need to bring the lawyers in just to get this piece of art on our walls? That adds a whole nother cost to sort of museum collecting practices, and I'm a little concerned about that on behalf of museums.
That is fascinating. That really could essentially have a slowing, if not chilling, effect on new acquisitions for museums here.
There might be a situation where we have everybody who collected up to the one with this case, great. Going forward, now we can't collect nearly as openly and freely as we did before on this era of American art.
Have we heard reactions from museums anywhere yet to the case, or is it still too
late? I think they're interestingly muted.
Interesting. Early days.
And Bhamathy, what about on the artist side?
Yeah, because I don't have that as much sympathy as you do, Peter, because look, museums are wrestling with questions of cultural appropriation right now. If it's in your collection, you have to be an ethical steward of it, and you have to think about questions like this. Okay, let's talk about artists, because that's where we really care in some ways, right? We all claim in the copyright world to care about artists. We all just come down in different places of how you care for artists. But if you're a young artist up and coming, and there's so many awesome young artists coming up in Boston, right? We are just a trove of creative people. On the one hand, if you're a photographer or somebody who creates works that can be used as the basis of other people's art, you're going to really look at this case and go, this gives me some suckers, some relief, right? Some sense that people are going to have to pay to use my work. Even if they transform it, they might want to think about getting a license from me and paying me for it. And boy, in the day where, you know, people are beginning to grab huge amounts of works in artificial intelligence and AI, that's really a serious concern. The Photographers Association, a bunch of associations wrote what they call amicus briefs, right? Briefs that are friends of the court on the side of Lynn Goldsmith saying, hey, paying for work is what that's how we make our living, our livelihood. So if you're a so-called appropriation artist, like a Richard Prince or like a Hank Dallas Thomas or like Andy Warhol, now, you know, I'm speaking posthumously, but nonetheless, there are tons of appropriation artists in the contemporary art scene. Now you're going to have to think, okay, I'm going to use that underlying work. How much of it and how extensively am I going to use it? What if I can't get a license?
Interesting.
Then what do I do?
All right. Well, I get it now. Like after reading yesterday and prepping, I wasn't sure I got it. I get it now. So thank you to both of you. Bhamathy Viswanathan, Peter Carroll, both faculty at New England Law Boston. We've been watching this one. Peter, you helped set it up for us a couple months ago. Thanks for coming in and, pun intended, closing the case. I appreciate
it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
There's more ahead. I'm Tiziana Deering. You are listening to Radio Boston.